Hey, this is Shelby Lynn, and you're watching Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Olas and yours and senoritas. This is Chris Shiflett, and you are listening to episode number 171. Of America's favorite podcast, Walking the Floor. You know, folks, we find ourselves here in the waning days of summertime. My kids are already starting to get antsy that school's going to start again here soon. And when I say start, I mean, you know, online school or whatever. But they'll have to go back to sitting there doing schoolwork all day long instead of going to the beach and all that sort of thing. And been a good little break here, good little summer. I don't know what you've been keeping yourself busy with, but I've been getting kind of obsessed with fishing lately. I started, you know, I was like fishing off the shore, catching little perch, and then I got a bigger rod and reel, and I started catching some weird stuff a little further out, and I just got a fishing kayak, and I've been going out to the kelp beds and fishing stuff. So part of that is, you know, I spend a lot of time on my computer looking up, like, you know, how to fish for calico bass out at the kelp beds and things like that. And it has tricked, it's weird, it has tricked my computer, it has tricked the algorithm that works for Google or YouTube or whatever into thinking that because I'm interested in fishing now, that I have become like a Trumpy, QAnon, modern patriot, whatever you call it, type of person. Because now my every time I go online, I like NRA ads are popping up and ammo supply sites and these websites that sell like right-wing conspiracy t-shirts with like scary pictures of the Clintons and all this crazy bupkis. But I was just trying to figure out how to like tie a San Diego jam knot. So I'm a little confused. I don't know why that makes me a QAnon supporter. I don't know what I got to do. Start like looking up Bernie Sanders clips or something to get to right the wrong that's going on there. It's a trip. I don't know what that says about how these algorithms read what we all do. I did watch a YouTube tutorial last night on how to program a train beat in Logic, so my honky-tonk demos just got a serious, serious upgrade. Hopefully that'll tweak it and make things right. Stop sending me the QAnon stuff. I'm not one of them, whatever that is. All right, let's pay some bills. You know, nobody makes the best gear from the best brands more affordable than Zounds.com. You never have to pay full price all at once when you buy from Zounds if you use their exclusive payment plans. So you can create music, not how am I going to pay for this headaches? Zounds.com. Get over there today. Come on, people. All right, let's get to today's interview.
Sitting across from a stranger you can't live without, a voice that lights your way. Don't know whose it is.
All right, so I sat down with Shelby Lynn via Zoom, of course, back in the middle of April, right around the time that her latest self-titled record came out. And it was funny listening back to it this week to get it ready to post. Just the way that we're talking about coronavirus stuff and live streaming and planting gardens and everything, it just seems like forever ago, and it was really only a couple of months, but these are the strange times we live in. Fear not, we also talk quite a bit about her latest record, and you know, when I think of Shelby, I think of somebody that's never been pinned down or allowed herself to be pinned down stylistically. She kind of moves around a lot, and she talks about that. You know, she talks about her path through mainstream country music back in the day when she was first starting out in Nashville, and how she sort of claimed her own path, and how she started writing songs, and the realities of the modern, ever-changing music business. So without further ado, this is Shelby Lynn on Walking the Floor. I commend you for being one of the only people I've interviewed through Zoom that actually has their audio functional when the interview starts.
I have a good setup person.
Oh, good, good, good. What are you doing these days to keep busy and stay kind of sane?
Well, I planted a garden. I've been doing that. It's nice, finally, weather out here in LA to get, you know, outside. So I'm digging that. What about you?
I did the same thing. That's so interesting. I,
I think of it as my little victory garden, my coronavirus victory garden. But I don't have much of a green thumb, truth be told. I have periodically planted gardens over the years, and they all kind of die because I leave for tour. But obviously, right now, that's not an option. So it's doing okay. My melons seem to have completely died. Tomatoes are doing okay, and I planted some peppers that are maybe.
Now, that's what I meant, to plant some melons. I got to go get some of those. Put on a mask and gloves and face the, you know, the fray and go get some watermelons.
Seriously, like I keep every day when I'm watering my garden, looking at my dying melon, you know, seedlings. I keep meaning to Google, like, what the fuck am I doing wrong with these melons to kill them off like this? But then by the time I get back in my house, I forget. So who knows?
Yeah, man, who knows anything?
Who knows anything? Seriously, well, like, have you thought much about, I assume, you know, you just put out a new record. I assume this is, like everybody else, completely upended, you know, whatever plans you had for the year, touring and, yeah, and promotional and otherwise. But have you thought much about, like, how do you see this ending for people that do what we do? Like, when are people going to be, that's the thing I keep asking myself is, when are people going to be comfortable being in crowds?
I don't know. I really don't. Because if you think about what we do, shoulder to shoulder, meeting people, shaking hands, giving hugs, taking pictures, doing all that shit, I can't imagine anybody being into that.
When are you going to possibly be comfortable taking a selfie with people, fans of yours? You know what I mean?
I don't know that I would. I mean, let's face it, it's uprooted our living here. We're just going to have to do more of this shit, I guess, because, yeah, you know, I'm not so sure that anybody's ready to go out and take pictures. I mean, honestly, I was thinking about being on tour and how close we are to people all the time, because that's how you connect.
Sure.
And, you know, even standing from stage, you know, shaking hands and doing and yeah, touching. And I mean, come on. The only thing I can say that's a positive is you don't have to pay for parking.
Have you been jumping into like the whole live stream thing? Have you been doing any of that?
Not really. I mean, I'm thinking about doing some things, but you know, I'm a musician, not a techie.
Right.
So my techie's over there in his own crib. So, you know, I have to figure this shit out. This was hard enough.
I agree. I know. It really, like, it's funny for me. It's really brought that into focus. Like, I've been kind of using the time to, you know, I've just gotten so lazy over the years. Yeah, like I can't run my Pro Tools rig without help. But, you know, it's just that kind of basic stuff that I feel like somebody my age that's done this for this long really should have some like, you know, basic skills at this stuff. And
I'm the same way. I mean, I used to be able to run my tape machine because it was just easy. You go over there and you push the cord away and you know, there.
Yeah.
But I'm just not very computery. I've never been, you know, I'm spoiled too. I guess I was talking to another friend of mine that's a studio nerd. And he's like, oh, I don't know how. I'm like, yeah, you know, if you want to make something, you got to figure it out. So I'm just putting everything down on cassette.
Oh, nice. Nice. Old school.
Yeah, I know how to work that.
Yeah, that's easy enough. Let's talk about your latest album that just came out, like, what, in the last?
Friday.
Yeah. So did you, how did this record come together? Where'd you make it and who'd you make it with and all that stuff?
Well, I started it out because I used to live out in Palm Springs. I started out there and then I moved here into Hollywood.
Okay.
And then I finished it here. I co-wrote songs with Cynthia Mort, who wrote and directed a film that I was in. The two kind of things coincided and
I was going to ask you about, are these songs from the movie? The movie is yet unreleased, correct?
Yeah, it's in the process.
Right.
It's getting distribution now, somehow.
Is this album like a soundtrack to the movie, or are these just two separate things?
They're songs from the movie. It's kind of a soundtrack, but it's not a soundtrack. It's really a record. It's a Shelby record, but it's a lot of the songs are in the film. But I recorded the songs in the film live, so these are studio versions.
Right.
Of the songs. But it was like a 4-year process, you know, doing this record, because we wrote a lot of songs and decided to just put out a record of them. And started thinking what of the 27 songs we wrote, which would make a great record. So here we are.
I mean, how do you sort of approach writing?
Me?
Are you somebody that writes all the time, or do you sort of write in batches, like as a viewing it as sort of a whole for a record?
Well, you know how you get on a roll.
Yeah.
You know, if you get on a roll, you know, things will start feeding each other.
Yeah.
But I kind of write all the time. You know, I'm one of those inspired fuckers that just, you know, if it hits me, I do it then.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to have a rhyme or reason to do it. I just do it when it hits me, and I'm always glad and I'm always grateful, because, you know, those spurts of time in between can really throw you around. Right?
Yeah. And so, it's an interesting thing. I always find when I, you know, in this day and age of the record business and music business, you spend so much time doing sort of the non-creative sides of putting a record out, that can be kind of all encompassing, especially, you know, if you have a family or other stuff in your life, whatever, you know, that.
Yeah. What music business?
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, just the act of putting out a record takes so long, you know, just getting the artwork together and mm-hmm. lining up who's going to put it out and doing promo, you know, there's just obviously, you know, there's a million steps to it. And I find that when I'm sort of buried in that, I don't do a lot of writing. And then there's that thing when you sort of sit back down to write some songs, of like, oh, it's like the muscle's weak, you know?
I understand. I don't know. I don't think I finally allowed myself to say this doesn't have to be great. I'm just writing. This doesn't have to be fantastic. I'm just writing it.
Right.
And there's a little freedom in that, and you keep the muscles up, as you say.
Yeah.
But you know, I did that to myself for a long time. Well, this is not great. I can't do it. And so I let all that go. That's what being 52 gets you.
I'm almost there. I'm looking forward to it. Hey, now how come, first thing I thought of when I saw, before I'd even listened to your new record, when I just saw the record, you know, saw the title of the record, why self-titled? Like, what does that say? That seems like almost a statement in itself, but what is that statement?
Well, it is a statement. I guess when you call your record your name, you're saying, this is it. And songs are really personal. And, you know, it's really kind of more simple than that. I just never had a self-titled record and I wanted one. So kind of all she wrote on that.
All right. Like who produced it and played on it?
I did.
Right. Now I read you played most of the instruments, but do you have like a band that you keep together? Did you bring other folks in for stuff?
No, I had Ben Mott come in. He played a little. A couple of fellas played a little things, but mostly it was just me fooling around and doing it, because I just was in the moment the whole time. And
right.
I produced it. So
where'd you record it? Do you have like a home studio or something?
Yeah.
Or did you? Okay.
Yeah. I got a vibe in the house, and you know, it's down the road in a little space I have, but still it's kind of like a little house and comfortable, and you know, I have it simple, so I can do it. You know, that was the day, like we were talking, when I could bring my buddy over and he would go, bloop.
Right. Yeah. I read that you mixed it at Capitol. Is that true?
Yeah. Mark Howard, great producer, helped me mix it. And it's always great to go to Capitol.
You know, that's why I wanted to ask. I've never actually been in that room. And I've always, you know, you see the pictures of Buck and Frank Sinatra and whoever else recording in there.
Mm-hmm. That's
obviously got a lot of history.
That's awesome. That's a lot of ghosts in that room. I mean,
yeah.
That's a big, big, big room. We mixed it over in B, which is the room next to it, which is a smaller room. It's got the old Neve. And, the big room has the new Neve, you know, with all the bells and whistles. But I like that old analog.
Do they still have like some of the mics and gear and stuff that was around back in the day when those classic records?
Yes, I've actually sung on Frank's mic.
Really?
Yeah, when I did the Dusty Springfield record, I sang in that mic. Yeah.
Wow. Did you you recorded that album there?
I did. With Al Schmidt and Phil Ramone. That was like in 2008.
Wow. Do you know, I always get asked like, from recording in various rooms like RCA Studio A or whatever, like if there's sort of a weight in those rooms because of the history. And to me, I never feel that. I just put that out of my mind. I mean, how do you, it's kind of like goes back to what you said a minute ago, like about songwriting and how it doesn't, you don't have to put these sort of shackles on yourself. Do you feel any of that in those rooms? Like, oh my, that's sort of the weight, you know, of history.
A room like Capitol, you can't help but feel something. I don't know what the hell it is, but there's a vibe in there. So I don't know what the vibe was, but I just kind of like, whatever it is, just kind of take me over, man, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing anyway.
Right. But how did you get into acting? You mentioned being in this movie. Are you playing yourself in this movie, or are you playing a role?
I'm playing a singer, but I'm not playing me.
Right.
I've been doing some acting for a long time here and there and small things, you know, nothing ever really big, but I kind of dig it. It's cool if it's the right thing, you know, it's not my go-to, you know, but it's always a kind of a cool experience to do something else. It's just another version of performing.
Sure.
Really.
Did you take acting lessons, ever go down that road, or you just kind of...
I've never taken a lesson to do anything.
Well, let's get to that. How did you start singing and playing? Like, what are your sort of earliest, you know, musical memories from your childhood? What was around that led you down that path?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Frankville, Alabama, and there's nothing there. Absolutely nothing there but woods. And Blacktop Highway. And so the first records I heard were Mama and Daddy's records that they had lying around, you know, which was the Beatles and Elvis and Everly Brothers and George Jones and then the Merle Haggard. And, you know, I started singing before I could really talk and started playing guitar when I was six. So I kind of had it mapped out. I knew that I was going to be a picker then. So the influences just kind of kept. All I knew is when I was around 6 years old, I wanted to play guitar so I could sing for myself.
Mm.
And that's kind of how it happened. And I just kind of come from a musical family. Daddy was an old weekend guitar picker.
Yeah.
Mama could sing and pick a little bit. And then all of her family were musicians and, you know, it was just what I was meant to do, man.
Yeah, it's funny. I look at, you know, my own family, and nobody in my family was a musician besides my brothers. I mean, it started kind of with my oldest uh-huh. brother, and he passed it down to the rest of us. But like my parents weren't. And then I look at my own, you know, I have three boys of my own, and at least as of yet, I have not passed that bug on to them. So I'm always curious with other people, you know, where that sort of the, you know, you have to be kind of obsessed to do this for a living, you know?
Yeah, well, they'll figure it out as soon as they figure out there's no jobs to be had.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Sadly, that isn't just out there in the regular 9-to-5 world. That's our industry too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we're all going to become creative in other ways to figure out what to do and make a living.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Weird world out there, man.
It really is. I mean, it is strange times. I have to kind of force myself to, it's not like I don't want to pay attention. I just like I pay attention too much. Kind of have to take a break from it, you know, yeah. Here and there.
It's overwhelming. I mean, we have anxiety and don't even know why.
Yeah.
It's just our bodies are going. You know, you feel like you're walking a little bit sideways sometimes.
Yeah. Now, I know, even before all this, you know, and then now we're all stuck in our houses. Sort of forces, like it's this forced self-reflection that can be a little uncomfortable.
Sometimes.
A lot of the time.
And you and I are lucky. We get to do podcasts.
Exactly.
A lot of people are in a bad way.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. I mean, it's hard to even talk about because, you know, initially, I've been going, as I'm sure you have too, for what seems like forever. You know, I've never had a break, and I love it, and I love what I do for a living and all that stuff. And it's obviously I'm super lucky, but at least initially I felt like, you know, this is terrible for the world. You know, this is obviously there's a lot of this impacting a lot of people in a lot of bad ways, but in my own personal life, it's given me a moment to take a breath that I feel like I kind of needed, you know?
Right.
But now I'm like, when's that going to end? I took my breath. Let's get back.
I mean, to kind of put it in perspective, you know, we're sitting here talking about my record and what we do for a living, which is make music. So we kind of have to make music for people even now. So
yeah.
We can make people feel better.
Right.
You know, because people are not feeling better.
No, and definitely not.
So if what we do for a living as a job, I think we got to be doing it.
Yeah.
And if you have to do it like this, you know, if we have to do it like this for a while, then we're just going to have to, because I can't see us going out playing any honky tonks for a while.
Well, I think it's funny. The live stream thing is like, it's going to be good for all of us. Like, you know, obviously musicians, there's no short supply of ego and narcissism in our industry, and the live stream like takes away, there's no applause. You know what I mean? So you finish your song and it's just dead silent. You're like, now what do I do? it's a good exercise for us all. When did you start playing shows? Like, when did you start playing out and performing?
Well, I mean, I have a record deal when I was 19. So then, you know, I'm working on my 30th year here.
Right.
So, yeah.
Did you move to Nashville to sort of make it in the biz? Was that?
Yeah.
So how did that, I mean, that was a, when would that have been, like
88?
Okay, so the music industry was in a very different place at that point. What was that experience? How did you, you know, it's ultra competitive world to try to get a record deal in any genre, but what was that like? How did that come together?
Well, it was a totally different place uptown then. That was like Nashville used to have a television network. It was called TNN, the Nashville Network. And they worked it out of Opryland out there. And it was a for real television network, you know, whatever. And they had a show on there called Nashville Now, when it was hosted by old cat Ralph Emery.
I've watched that. I've watched YouTube clips of that. Yeah.
And I was living in Mobile, Alabama, and I made a little demo tape of some local songwriter's little things. And he's dead now. This old codger at the time was an old manager, and he picked me up. He said, I think I can get you on this TV show. I'm like, shit, okay, that's all I wanted, man. And so he got me on the damn show. And I got a record deal offer. I was lucky.
Just based on that one show appearance? And were you playing around town though at the same time?
No,
like doing the songwriter rounds and all that?
No, hell no. I wasn't even writing songs then.
Really?
No, I was just singing. I just wanted to be singing.
So what was that like? What did a major label at that time do to develop an artist? A young artist? I mean, you must have been totally green at that
point. Well, I mean, my thing was like a weird thing, man, because I signed with CBS, and Billy Sherrill, legendary Billy Sherrill, said, I'll produce a record. I'll produce her. So I met with Billy, and then we made this album. And we wound up doing a duet with George Jones on the fucking record, right? And we did the thing. And I just was this I didn't know how the business worked. I just knew I could sing. So we cut this record and I don't know. And it happened from there. And then by the time the second record rolled around, I'm like, I hate this business. It sucks. This has nothing to do with music.
Already by the second record, really?
Oh, yeah. And so I started realizing, why would I cut songs that other people are telling me to cut? I don't have any relationship to this song. Well, because it's a hit record, I'm like, I don't like this. This is not something that I'm into. So I made a second record with him, and I had a hit record. And I'm like, And so by the time the third record rolled around, I'm like, I don't want to be in this business. And that's when I started writing songs. Because with the songwriting changed everything. I'm like, I got to say what I need to say, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but this is not, you know, I don't mind interpreting other people's songs, but only if I choose what they are. Right. So Nashville was a machine. It's still a machine, but it was a different kind of machine now. You know, back then they'd sign you to these 7-album deals and stuff like that.
Right.
Now you're lucky to get one record out.
So after your second record was a hit, did that sort of give you the, like, you know, a foothold to take a little more creative control over what you were doing? Or how did the people that were running the label or running your career at that time sort of react to that?
No, that was not good. It was not good. By the third record, they'd already lost interest, and I was looking to get off the label. So I did, and, you know, I was just 22 years old at the time. So I started doing what I wanted to do. My next record was a full-out, blown-out fucking Western swing record with 15-piece horn section on it. Well, you know, that was the first time I was ever really happy in that town. So it was, I knew that things were going to change, and they certainly did.
I mean, I imagine you, because you've stylistically jumped around a lot over the course, and you made a lot of records over the years, and they vary, you know, from, like, you know, what you're talking about, sort of more mainstream country to more Americana, alt pop, whatever, even some jazzy stuff, you know, and some R&B. I imagine that there must have been extreme pressure from whoever was working with you to just pick a lane and stick to it.
Well, after I left CBS, I never had that trouble again.
Really?
No. Because I already had such a terrible reputation. anybody that worked with me knew what they were getting into. So,
right.
You know, hey, I'm kind of grateful for all of it, because truly anybody that worked with me after that point, they knew what they were getting into.
Right. Which begs the question, how do you forge a long career in this world, you know, being a headstrong artist?
You'd put out good work. Period. And fuck all. You know, if you don't like it, well, I'll go somewhere else. I'll sell it on the corner. But this is what I'm doing.
I mean, you've done everything, like major labels, indies, big indies, self releases. Mm-hmm. Now, I think your latest record's out on 30 Tigers, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the sort of, which one of those works best for you? Where are you most comfortable?
Well, 30's great. They're pretty cool because they just basically distribute, and it's under my own label through right. them, you know. Yeah. So they kind of have a
in
great...
In the interest of full disclosure, I put my last record out through them as well. So.
Yeah, they're great because they let us do whatever in the hell we kind of want to and, you know, do all those number things.
Yeah.
Which is shit. You know, I have my own label for years, since 2010, after my last... that when I had a deal with... I don't even remember who they are. The I don't know. They're long ago gone. Anyway, I just said, this is time. I'm going to do my own label, use my own money, put out my own thing. Screw this shit. I don't want anything to do with it anymore. And I did. And it's still rolling. So it's small, but it's mine.
Right. So what do? You farm out, like, you hire a publicist and hire a radio promo guy and, you know, all that sort of thing?
Oh, I don't do radio.
Right.
I have a publicist and do a little, if I'm in the mood. Sometimes I don't want to do publicist, but, you know, I just sell a few records off my website. That's my thing. You know, I have my own product at my little office studio space, and if anybody wants a record or a CD, I'll sign it and send it out.
Right.
You know, hell, I'm not getting rich, but I can certainly sleep at night.
I get it. I mean, it's an interesting thing, because I think for people maybe that, you know, are just starting out or don't actually work in this field, there's a sort of a, what would you call it? There's a romantic notion that major labels are just corporate monsters, and in a lot of respects they are. And then the world of indie labels are just, you know, that's where the soul is, and that's where people really just are, it's about the art and all this thing. I've worked with a lot of different labels over the years, big and small, and I don't find that to be the case at all. And nothing against indie labels. Like, it's, you might find a little bit more of that, but indie labels have payroll and want to sell records and all that. You know what I mean? It's more or less the same mindset. It's just on a smaller scale.
It's a littler thing. Hey, you know what? I figure if you can write some good songs, record them, make it sound great, get you some product and sell it out of the back of a Cadillac, you're golden.
Yeah.
Because really, music business is over.
I mean, it's all about touring nowadays.
Like, and we're not doing any of that.
Well, we're not doing that anytime soon, but in recent years, since you sort of shifted more to that model of doing things for yourself, like, do you spend a lot more time on the road? Is that sort of your
spend less time on the road?
Really?
Yeah.
How do you pull that off?
I just don't want to go.
Me neither. I want to stay home with you.
Okay. No, I go out sometimes. I mean, I love to perform. But, you know, I did that. And the business has changed. And, you know, it's hard to make a living out there, even in, you know, and I'm an old grouchy woman. I don't want to sit in a van and drive from Cleveland to Denver.
Oh God, you're speaking my language. Right?
I mean, come on, it's fun for a week.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, my back hurts.
Yeah. It's kind of like going to the same party every single night over and over again.
I mean, I love to perform. Don't get me wrong. And I love playing musicians, but I also don't want to go on the road and come back home with $278.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want to appear negative.
you're in the right place. You don't know me, but I can veer that direction at times.
I'm trying to get that. No, I mean, come on. It's fine. I mean, back in the day, you could get a bus and go out there, and it's not... It can't pay for itself.
Right.
And so everybody winds up being uncomfortable and half drunk.
Right.
And, you know, that's, what kind of show is that?
Yeah, it certainly, it's when I look back at when I first started touring in the mid 90s, you know, punk rock band on an indie, granted I was a kid, so I didn't care about discomfort in the same way, but exactly. It did seem like there was a route to coming home with a couple bucks in your pocket and being able to pay rent, and it's just not, doesn't seem to be there in the same way at all anymore.
It's just I think age, you're right, has a lot to do with it. You know, when you're fucking 28, you could sleep in the same fucking clothes for a week.
And you're stoked. You're like, oh, they gave us free beer. Woo!
I got to get in the shower. I got to scrub myself down. I got to put on my product. I got to feel like I got to, it's not the same.
Beyond my children and my wife.
I can live on salami and cheddar cheese. Don't get me wrong. But, you know.
I was going to say, beyond my children and my wife, you know, missing them, it's my coffee maker. That's the thing that drives me crazy on the road. I'm like, I need my fucking coffee maker.
It's these little things that we've just, you know, gotten used to. And, you know, man, we haven't been making music in 1972 when everybody was out there and rock and roll was king and things were different and it was just the most badass time. And it's not like that anymore.
Right.
It's just a changed world. Everybody's seen everything.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of figure it out. We got to come up with new ways to share what we do because we love doing it, and chill and have good homemade coffee, like you said.
Exactly. Hey, on a total left turn, but related. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about the record you made with your sister. Like, there's such a magic quality that happens when siblings sing harmony.
That is true.
And that's what that record is. It just buzzes. It just makes your ear buzz, you know? Why? How did that come together? I mean, I could guess, obviously, you guys are sisters, so that makes sense. But why did it take so long? Why didn't that happen sooner?
Probably because we've got probably 30 records between us. And two different careers on two different coasts and never been able to hook up and her doing one thing and me doing one thing. And, you know, it was just, the timing was just right this time. Mm. We want to make another record one day, but we want to write the songs. This particular record is a cover record and, we love it, but it's a cover record and, you know, I guess everything in the right time, you know, it was just, we made the record pretty quick. So we had some space to do it. And then, time enough to go on. Now see, we went on some dates, but we were together. So it was kind of a bit fun.
Hmm.
When you're out there all by yourself and you're missing your dog, you can't really have too much fun. Yeah. But yeah, Sissy and I enjoyed that. And, we're really proud of that.
Yeah, it's a great record.
Thank you.
Well, that's covered everything that I wanted to cover.
Okay.
Thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you.
Including me. And call me up if you ever want to get negative.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do that for sure.
Strange things that go down with love.
All right, Shelby Lynn on Walking the Floor. You know what to do, people. Go to walkingthefloor.com, get all the links to all the cool stuff, and stay up on what's happening with Shelby Lynn. Buy a t-shirt, stream a CD, whatever you do. That's it for this week. We'll be back. I'm probably going to be back sooner than expected because I'm so freaking backlogged with this podcast. I have more interviews in the can than I even know what to do with. And by the way, if you haven't listened to my last interview with Thomas Frank that I just posted in the middle of last week, get on it. It's important. All right. Adios, amigos.
It punishes us with the ordinary.